Welcome to the Disciple Makers Podcast. Every day, the opportunities for us to meet and interact with Muslims seem to be increasing. And over the last 20 years, there have been more Muslims coming to Christ than ever before. In this workshop from Focus 2017, we'll learn about Islam, hear experiences of how others have shared Jesus with Muslims, and be given some tools to help us minister to Muslims in our daily lives.
I'm Jen. This is my husband, Tony. And we're just going to be sharing with you about what we're doing with Overland Missions. I guess our session is called Reaching the Unreached, and that's really our focus because our heart is just to go to the most remote areas of people neglected. That's a word that I feel that's really heavy on my heart because, yes, a lot of people in the world are not Christians, and a lot of people have chosen not to follow God, but we go to areas where they've never even heard of God. So we'll start. We just really want to get a feel of, like, what you guys are thinking and why you're here. What is, like, your interest in missions? So we can start with, like, by a show of hands, but have any of you felt that you would like to do overseas missions? Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Have you guys done overseas missions? Where have you been?
I'm in Jamaica, El Salvador, and Honduras. I'll be going to the Amazon in Peru over the winter.
Nice.
Wow, that's incredible. Anyone else? Yeah?
Haiti and Bolivia.
Okay. Hmm. Wow. When did you go?
Within the past 3 years for each of them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry?
I just said four.
Has anyone not done overseas missions?
That wants to? Yeah.
Yeah? Would you consider doing it?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah? I think our next question is, like, what has stopped you? What has prevented you from going overseas? What about you?
I'm on staff with Disciple Makers.
Yeah?
So, yeah, I definitely felt called to this ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
But, yeah, I feel like I could take the opportunities that even Disciple Makers has to go overseas.
Yeah.
It just hasn't worked out yet.
Cool.
But I would like to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyone else? What has, like, stopped you? Yeah?
Fear of missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
FOMO. It's the worst. Mm-hmm. Just like missed opportunities, like when you leave, being, like, missing stuff here. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. What do you have going on this summer?
It's complicated.
Yeah? Probably a girl.
Isn't it always?
Just take her overseas. Well, we made a list of some things that we've heard in the past that's prevented people from going overseas. Fear in a different way, fear of missing out. Family, that's like a part of my story that I'll be sharing with you. Money is has that crossed your mind before? Missions overseas, you look at the dollar sign and you're like, no, I can't do
whoa,
it.
Whoa, whoa. Plane tickets are so.
Time, you're kind of like, the time frame doesn't work. I can't go overseas at this specific time. Or timing of like, it's too long or it's too short.
Mm-hmm.
These last couple ones are a little touchy. Like, what if I'm not called? What if missions is meant for people like Jen and Tony who are super hyper spiritual and willing to go and they're bold and they're brave? And what if I'm not called? Where do I start? Kind of sometimes people don't go overseas because they don't know that it's out there, that the opportunity is out there. And that's kind of part of our job is to recruit. So we go to events like Focus or, do you want to come in? Different colleges and stuff, wherever we have the opportunity to just share about what we're doing so that people can get an idea that, like, overseas missions is out there and it's not as complicated as you think it is. Because
mm-hmm.
we do most of the work. The last one you kind of mentioned, I'm already doing missions work where I am. And I think that's awesome. Know, like, what you're called to, know where you're supposed to be, because it's there that God's going to do his work in you and through you. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of just go through everything. But we kind of talked about how you guys have felt like a call to go overseas. So Tony will just share his story a little bit about how that came about.
Right. So I talked a little bit about it, but I was in college and I was going through college, but I always heard so much about missions. I always heard so much about like overseas missions. I was also like very much like, I'm going to be a writer. This is what I'm going to do, because I knew that from when I was, you know, 7 years old or whatever. And so I just assumed that like that was what God was calling me to do. And then more and more people were like, if you haven't gone overseas yet, if you haven't done a mission trip yet, you have to do it before you graduate. So my senior year, the week that I graduated, I went to Costa Rica. And I went to Costa Rica for a week. And before this time, like, the Lord had been moving like so much in my heart and like changing so much. Like, the fact that I even like signed up for that trip is a testament to his like movement, because I was not interested in missions at all. I was like, I was a very picky eater. I think that was like the big thing. I think that was like the main issue, which is terrible. This is such a dumb thing. But like before that, I had like memorized countries. I was like obsessed with geography. I was like obsessed with like, I had all the flags memorized, all the capitals, you know, all that stuff, and didn't realize that it was because I had a heart for the nations that the Lord had given me. And so I went to Costa Rica and realized, oh, it's not as hard as I thought it would be. I actually like the food. I tried pineapple for the first time in Costa Rica.
And it's his favorite fruit now.
And now it's my favorite fruit. And then So that felt like I could do it, you know. It was kind of like I took a step, and the Lord was there, and so I was like, okay, well maybe I could take another step. So I went to Africa, which is a big step, but Africa is not as intimidating as it seems when you actually get there, when you're actually like on the ground and in that place. We were in Zambia, in Livingston, and we went to this really like this rural village. We would drive like. Usually with most of our like Zambia trips, we drive like 10 hours into the bush and like set up camp with people that have probably not seen foreigners, Americans or whatever, for, you know, some of the kids for their whole lives have never seen a white person before. And so we drove out there and we got there, and they were so excited. They were like so ready to meet us and to hear what we had to say. Everywhere we went, they were like, oh yes, like here, let me bring out like stools and show you like what we do and tell you about our lives. And then I want to just hear, they get out like pen and paper and they're like ready to write down any verses you have or any like insight you have. So that was when I was like, I want to do missions. Like, missions is the thing. It was like the next step. And then I was like, I don't really know what that looks like, but I'll come back for the training next year. I'll do the 3 month training. And so we did the like 3 month training in 2015, and I said, okay, God, I'll do it. I'll do missions for the rest of my life. And so that was where it happened. So,
awesome. Do you guys have any questions? I don't want to like just zoom through everything. I want to give you a chance to process.
I mean, I don't know if you have any answers to some other point, but like a lot of missionaries, like you, come in and say, oh, I went to Costa Rica, I went to Africa, I went to this place. So like, if I buy a ticket to Costa Rica and I go, like, get off the, you know, get out of the airport, like, how do you know what cities you go to? Do you just talk to people on the street? Like,
yeah.
You know, how does this all set up? You know, you just went to Costa Rica. Well,
right.
Do you know to go to Costa Rica? How do you pay your ticket? How do you...
Yeah, I guess I should have explained that. So my school like had a lot of trips that were already like set up with other organizations. So they partnered with this organization called Pura Vida Missions in Costa Rica. And they were trying to like recruit like a team of 12 or whatever to come there. And then I went to Zambia with Overland Missions because I had a like really close friend in Overland Missions, and we lead like short-term trips all summer. So handle all the like logistics stuff and everything for that. But I've never just like hopped on it, like bought a plane ticket, hopped on a plane and gone to like some other country. It's always like within like a group. Yeah. Setting. So,
and we'll kind of talk about how like Overland Missions finds an area, and we do trips to those areas. We have to study those areas, so that's a really great question. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they called sectors? Is that what it is in Overland?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you heard of?
A missionary came to my house and spoke to a group of people at my house.
That's cool.
So like,
who is it?
Gosh.
If you think of it, you can just tell us.
Oh my gosh, I cannot forget. I can't remember their names.
We'll talk about it.
My Bible. We'll talk. We know. We know some of them.
From this place called like Overland Expeditions. Is that different, or is that you guys?
Expeditions, yeah. Yeah, we're an expedition.
What kind of mail are you getting?
Did you sign up for anything like that? Like,
maybe on like an email list. I know I did. This is not a religious group, but I did work with like a thing called Rustic Pathways.
I haven't heard of that.
It's a non-religious travel group where you kind of do community service work abroad.
Yeah. Maybe if you see something that like triggers, like, oh, I've seen that logo or something like that, just let us know.
Yeah.
Any other questions? This is cool. You guys are more talkative than last week. So this is my story. I did not grow up in a Christian home. My parents are from Vietnam, and they're immigrants. And we came to America when I was 4 months old, and I don't know. Growing up, I definitely, like, believed in God. Like, my dad grew up Catholic, so there's a Catholicism influence in my household, but I never knew Jesus himself. And then started going to youth group once we moved north of Pittsburgh, which is where we live now. And I remember, like, Pentecostal worship. I was, like, gripping the seats. I was like, I'm not raising my hands. What is this? Never really let the Lord come into my heart and really transform my life because I had a trust issue. I did not want to believe in God because what if he lets me down? Because he's let me down in the past. When I was 17, I finally gave my life to the Lord because I felt like there has just been so much darkness in my life and so much let down and through relationships, through family, and I gave my life to the Lord, and I was like, if Jesus is real, come into my life, change me, whatever you have to do, I just want to know if you're real. And from that moment on, I just had this peace and this knowing that Jesus is real, and since he's real and because the world has let me down, I want to live my life for him. Went to college. I went to Geneva College in Beaver Falls. And in college, a couple overland missionaries came and recruited and said that they had trips to Cambodia and Zambia, and at that time, the Dominican Republic. And I was like, oh, I want to go like somewhere like that. Like, that's close, safe. What is the hype about? What is missions work? I remember one time this missionary came to our church and prayed over me and shared his story, and I was like, you're a missionary? Like, I didn't know that that could be your job. Like, I can't believe you just do this for a living. What is that? Signed up for the trip to the Dominican Republic in 2013, but there had not been enough people signed up for that trip, so they changed it to Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And Cambodia actually borders Vietnam, so mm-hmm. I was going back to Southeast Asia, and it felt really daunting. It felt really like, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I also felt like I've done it, so I can't turn back. Like, I have this commitment thing. Like, if I say yes, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I needed to see what it was like for myself. So went to Cambodia, and it was just, once I got off the plane to Cambodia, I just felt like the Lord was saying to me, like, okay, you're here, like, I've led you here, I'm with you, I'm still with you, like, don't fear, don't worry about it. So I was just like, okay, I'm good, I'm here, I'm just gonna do what it takes. It's only 2 weeks of my life. Like, if I lose sleep over, if I don't eat, or if I get sick, whatever it takes, I'm here, I'm gonna commit everything I am to this. The first place that we went to with Overland, it was in this, like, village, and in Cambodia, they speak a different language than my family does. They speak Khmer, but there's a woman from Vietnam in Cambodia, and she asked me, are you Vietnamese, in Vietnamese? So I started talking with her, and I had never prayed out loud with someone in Vietnamese, but I just asked her, like, could I pray with you? And I just did, like, the small steps about it, and it just was awesome to have the opportunity to share with someone. I asked her, like, have you ever heard of Jesus? And She's like, no, like, I don't know who that is. And she told me her story, and I might be overtelling a little bit, but in Cambodia, about 40, 50 years ago, there was this huge massacre of Cambodians, and her husband was a part of that, and he was murdered, and she was sharing the hurt that she's experienced through and still, like, going through that. So I prayed with her, and I, like, had my hand on her, and I was praying with her, and she was like, when you were praying for me, I felt, like, electricity in my, down my arm, and I just have so much joy. And I was like, oh my gosh, Jesus, like, this woman could have never been starting down the path of restoration if not, if she had not heard the gospel. Mm-hmm. So that's my story and how I feel like the Lord has called us to full-time missions. How we met. Do you want to share this?
Yeah.
I'll fill in if I need to.
So we both individually felt called to missions before this point. And then Overland does this thing called AMT, which is 3-month training in Zambia. So you go and you live on this on the base in Zambia and learn everything that it takes to do ministry and missions in the third world. So like we learned like bush cooking, like cooking over a fire, or we learned like welding or preaching or wilderness first aid or survival, you know, skills and stuff, and all of this stuff. So we both had signed up for this training individually, and we got we like ended up there, and we had our little class of 22 students, and we that was kind of how we like got connected. I think like you kind of end up, you know, making little cliques and little circles and groups, and we just made our own little group and got to know each other. Do you want anything?
No, I'm good. Okay. You keep going.
Great. Well, we didn't, so we finished, because it was against the rules to start dating when you were overseas. So we didn't, we were very committed to that. We came back and then we started actually like thinking about those feelings and like I think it was more just like becoming an acceptable thing. It was becoming a reality. So I asked her out in the beginning of October or so a couple months after we got back.
I don't know if you guys overheard, but he's from Boulder, Colorado, and I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And we had a team of 22 people from all over America came out to Zambia interested in this 3-month training. And I definitely felt like this guy's cool and he's cute, and but I have to follow the rules. Like, I'm not a rule breaker. Like, but the only rule we broke was curfew. So we'd stay up really late talking and stuff. But it felt like friendship. Like, it felt like we were committed to what the Lord has called us to in this 3-month training, and we're not looking for a relationship right now, and that was the best thing. Like, focus on the Lord, side by side, doing whatever he's called us to do. And I was like, what if I get back to America, and, like, he's, like, a weirdo, and, like he doesn't really believe in Jesus, and he's just putting up a front. Like, what if it's not real?
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
Trust issues. but...
Yeah.
We definitely have always clicked and stuff. So now mm-hmm. we committed to joining staff with Overland before we had started dating. Mm-hmm. Got engaged last May 19th last year, and then got married November 19th. So,
but I think here, like, we are. I think for us, the thing that I think is really significant in our relationship, and I think that a lot of people miss out on, is like, we had both decided that we were going to be missionaries and that we were going to do this, and then when we had decided that, we were like, oh, okay, this person is also doing that, and so we got together. Because I think that, like, because that's kind of like James and Faith's story. They were both like, I mean, you'll hear more about it if you go to the optional thing, but they were both like, yeah, we want to be missionaries, or want to like feel called to the Lord. And then from that, like, neither of their passions had to be like stifled, you know. You don't want to like have one person have to give up what they're called to do for the sake of the other. So Yeah, that's the way.
Just some free dating advice, you know.
Free dating.
Any questions? Any thoughts? Okay. I'm just gonna. Oh wait, you want to do this? This is good stuff.
Oh, this is the good stuff. Yeah. So if you have your Bibles, this is really important, I think, because we're all called to be ministers of reconciliation, right? We're all called to be missionaries, so to speak. But we have to understand what that looks like for us and what the Bible says about that. So in 2 Corinthians 5:18, it uses that phrase ministry of reconciliation, but before that it says, from now on, therefore we regard no one according to the flesh. Even though we once regarded Christ according to the flesh, we regard him thus no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. So this is the verse right before that that talks about us being a new creation. I think that phrase is so interesting because it implies that we're a totally different being. We're a completely new person as soon as we give our lives to Christ. James is talking about how there's only two kingdoms. There's the kingdom that we're born into, and then there's the kingdom we accept through Christ. And we need to realize that when we accept Christ, we become something entirely different. We get, he takes out our heart of stone and gives us a heart of flesh, and not a heart with chunks of stone still in it, you know? It's a totally new heart. And so when we realize that we are new, that we're made new, and there's nothing of the old nature inside of us. We can walk out who we really are. You can go to the next slide real quick. But like there's the story of Jesus' transfiguration, right? You guys know that story. Jesus goes up on the mountaintop with his three best buds, and turns dazzling white and turns completely white so that they like can't even look at him. And it says he was transfigured before their eyes. And that word transfigured only shows up two other times in the New Testament. It comes up in these two verses in Romans 12:2, where it says, be not conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transfigured by the renewing of your mind. And then 2 Corinthians 3:18, which I have to go to now, but says, we all with unveiled face. It's talking about us. It's talking about you and me as believers in Christ. We all with unveiled face are beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image. So we're being transformed to that same image that Jesus was when he was standing on that mountaintop. The inward glory inside of him was coming out so that they could see it. And in the same way, if we behold the face of God, our inward glory is coming out. That same spirit that God put inside of us is coming out, and we don't have to. It's not about like us doing anything. It just comes out to be revealed to everyone around us. And so, when we talk about being a new creation, we need to realize that everything's already been done for us. It says in Galatians 3:3, like having been begun by the Spirit, are you being perfected by the flesh? It doesn't make any sense to try to finish the work that Christ's already done. But we just need to walk in who he says he is and walk in relationship with him, and then the glory of God will reveal itself to everyone around us. That's what being a minister of reconciliation is. It's just being a light of Christ within this world. And I love this last verse in 2 Corinthians 5:21, where it says, for our sake he made him to... He made him to be sin who knew no sin. Sorry, I just like lost it. So that we might become the righteousness of God. So God chose to be that old self for us so that we could become his new self. So we could be Jesus in this world. We could walk as Jesus walked in the same exact way. And I think that we sometimes don't give ourselves as much credit as we deserve, but we've been called to walk the same exact life that Jesus walked. To be partakers of the divine nature is what it says. So, yeah.
Our hope is that this stirs up some excitement in you, because you have to believe this if you want to go into missions. You have to believe this if you want to share the gospel with anyone, mm-hmm. anywhere in the world, because they want to know, like, why should I follow your Jesus? Like, either they're totally content with however they're living their lives, so they don't want to give their life to Jesus, or they're completely lost and hopeless. So what is the hope? Like, why do I need Jesus? And mm-hmm. he is the hope, because he comes into your life and everything that you've known before Jesus, he wipes away. He takes it upon himself and gives you his perfected life so that you can have this ability to go through life on earth as if you were in heaven. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go through like the five stages of Overland and all the logistics and stuff. And to me, it's exciting, but this is the stuff that we want you to walk away with, right? Because we want him to start transforming you. We want him to start igniting this fire in your heart, because you're not really going to give your life to missions, because if you're still living in the flesh, then you're going to do missions, but it'll be for yourself. You'll do it because, like, you're trying to, you know, get an adventure. And it's going to happen. Those things are awesome. But, like, once you get the new creation, it's like, wow, Jesus, I can't help it. Like, mm-hmm. I have to tell people about you because you're the best. Mm-hmm.
That's really our prayer for you guys, is that this would be, like, a time where you can understand, like, what missions is in your everyday life. Because I know that not all of you are going to necessarily feel like, well, I have to go overseas right now. Like, I have to be a missionary, you know, in whatever country. But you're called to be a missionary wherever you are. And I think I love this quote, because it talks about, like, this idea that, because we think that missions is like our little, like, section of, we have like our little missions office and missions, little missions pastor in our church. But missions is not a part of our church. It's not like a little segment of our church, but the church, us as a church body, is a segment of like the Great Commission. We're all called to be missions minded and focused, because that is the one thing Jesus told us to do. Go therefore, make disciples of all nations. So where whatever nation you're in, whatever nation you feel you can make the biggest impact, go and do it.
Yeah. So. Please stop me if you have any comments. Mm-hmm. So, like we said, we shared our story and how the Lord has called us to missions, and our heartbeat is for the world to know Jesus. And Overland Missions truly has been that for us, is like this avenue that we've chosen to walk down. But there's obviously other avenues and other missions work that you can find yourself in. But for us, it's Overland Missions, founded in 1999 by Phil Smethurst. And this is our specific crew, our expeditions area. I already said we exist to bring the gospel to the most remote and neglected people in the world. And we work through these five stages: recon, evangelism, sector, sector management, humanitarian, and sustainability. Our first is our recon, and I'm going to talk about Cambodia right now just because that's kind of the direction that Tony and I are going in. So the first thing you do we look through Google Earth and we try to find an area that we would deem a sector, because it looks like that area hasn't been reached with Jesus. So these are some statistics that you can just Google, but these are from the Joshua Project. Mm-hmm. Buddhism is 85% there, which is crazy. And a part of the Buddhism that you find there, which is unlike the Buddhism you might know in America, there's a lot of ancestry worship. And we've really found that that's where the bondage for the Cambodians are, because they have such a loyalty to their ancestors mm-hmm. and to their family. So we would look at an area like Cambodia, and once we deem it a sector, then we have within Overland people go into that area. And so our first thing that we did in 2012 was go to Phnom Penh, which is a city, and try to scope it out, get the feel of it. What is like the climate of this area? Are they hostile to Christians? Like, are there missionaries here already? What is the work that they're doing? Different things like that. And we ask those questions. So that's just kind of us like kind of breaking ground in this area. So in 2012, we started in Phnom Penh. And then we go into expedition. So we had two missionaries in Cambodia at the time, and their names were Sarah and Hunter. And their first trip was in 2013, and I had gone to that trip with them. So no one had been living in this area yet. So we flew into Phnom Penh, which is west, and then we went to Siem Reap. And then in Siem Reap, we started going out into like the villages that Sarah and Hunter had already studied what it looks like. We met with a pastor and his wife, and then what they were already doing in this area, asked them, are there people that need to be reached? And they were like, yes, this is where we need to go. No one has ever been to this village before. So we went out into that village and took the gospel with us, prayed for people. This is one of the houses that we had gone to. This woman here was a monk, and she had just had a seizure, and it paralyzed like the whole like left side of her body. And we're sitting there, and we were like praying with her and talking with her. And typically, you don't like you have to ask if you're gonna like, can I lay hands on you? Can I put my hand anywhere? So I just asked someone to translate for me, like, can I lay my hand on you? Like, can I pray with you? And so we did that, and she had not had like any hearing, any movement or anything. So we just kept praying, and we asked her, like, can you hear? Can you hear? And she was like, I can hear, like, I can hear a little bit. And then at one point, I was praying with her, and she lifted her hand, and I screamed because she hadn't done it. Like, she hadn't lifted her hand because she had a seizure. And so that was just incredible. And then we gave her an opportunity to give her life to Jesus, and she was like, no, like, you know, just, and then we had left, and then the next day we had gone back, and her family was telling us that she does want to give her life to Jesus. Like, in her entire life of laying it all down for these gods and these idols, like, they'd not done anything like that for her. And that's the story that we want to share with Cambodians, is God's love for you doesn't demand anything from you. He wants to give you stuff. So this woman had spent her entire life, she was like in her 80s as a monk, and then gave her life to Jesus at the end. So that's a little bit about expeditions. And then our stage three, these don't necessarily have to work in these orders. It's just how we operate. But stage three is sector. So this is Sarah and Hunter. They were with Overland the same way that we did expeditions and then the three-month training. And in 2016, which was just last year, they decided to move there and live there full-time. They just had their baby, Myla, and she is going to be, I think she just turned one in February. But this is, they live in Cambodia full-time. So we have a sector, we do our recon, we start doing expeditions, but we also place our missionaries to live there long-term. So they are going to be there, like, now, like, 2 years. I think they started their 2 year, and they won't be back to America for 2 years because they want to see that place be transformed with the work of Jesus.
And they'll only be back for a couple months before going back.
So
just to see people.
They'll focus on training, like, the local pastors, our translators. We do a lot of ministry with them because most of them maybe have, like, given their lives to Jesus, but they're not discipled. So we have to start the discipling process and equipping them so that they can go out on their own once Sarah and Hunter feel called to another area. So that's our sector. Mm-hmm. Questions? I talk fast because I think you understand, but if there are questions. Anything? Yeah?
But, whether it's short-term missions or staying long-term, is there a sense of what you study the culture or
Yeah, they know a lot more about Cambodia than I do because they live there. They study the people. They're studying the language, like Khmer. Our friend Marlon, he married a Khmer woman, and he's also in sector. Sam Bat? Yeah. Did they just visit you, like, recently? Or, yeah?
Yeah, they. We had, like, our community group come over our house, and they talked.
That's awesome.
Got it.
That's cool. Yeah, so Marlon and Sam Bat, yeah. they also live there. So they're one of the first things we do with our 2-week expeditions is give you an overlook of what the culture is like. So I already mentioned you can't really lay hands on people, and that's like a respectful thing. There's like a, like, you never put your foot towards someone because that's also disrespectful. Can't think of anything else. There's like different like cultural things that we have to like explain to our people who've never been in a culture like this. Sorry, I can't think of anything on top of my head. Yeah. If I think of something, I'll bring it up. But yeah, definitely. Yes.
So, like, you guys and the people that go on these sector missions seem to do a lot religiously. What was your experience kind of like from like a cultural anthropology standpoint with like going abroad to these countries? Did you get a lot away from like studying their culture?
I'm sorry. Did you?
Yeah, yeah. So the question's kind of like, did you like understand more about the Cambodian culture from being on these like the short term trips or from like?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, so I think that you learn a lot about people just by seeing them like living naturally and doing their own thing. And I think we try to bring as much as possible to the forefront of their mind when they're in those places. But I think that it takes a little bit longer than 2 weeks to really understand. I remember my first Zambia trip, I just kind of like dove in. I knew like how to say good morning and hello and thank you, and then when we went for 3 months, and like we took, there was a class that we took was culture class, and we actually learned like what is like preeminent in Zambian culture and Cambodian culture. And then we did ministry after that. And that was a huge, like, oh, like this, all this makes sense now. It makes sense. Like why these people are like acting the way that they are necessarily.
Yeah. So. I think there's like a culture shock as Americans to go to a place that's so different than what we're used to. So that there's that initial like reaction to it, because they don't have like things that are accessible the way that we do. So we lived in Zambia for 3 months, and I remember thinking, I can't wait to get back to my home that I can walk to a convenience store, like, up the road from me. Like, that was, like, a part that I was like, this is so strange. And then there are, like, the cultural things that you learn from the people that live there longer term. My family is Asian, so in Cambodia, it actually wasn't much of a culture difference for me. But it was cool to learn why my parents do the way that they do things, which was awesome for me. Like, I never thought, like, this is something that my parents specifically do. So that's been really cool. Stage 4, humanitarian. I just wanted to share some stories about when we were in Zambia, because our focus is first, like, to share the gospel. So if we have an area where we're doing expeditions or sector or humanitarian, the focus is always to raise up people and disciple them with the gospel. We're not going to go in and say, bringing you water and food and all these things and not give you the gospel, because we would be doing you a disservice. So Sikalele is a village that we had gone to in Zambia in 2015. And the first story, Cesar, we had gone to this house, and it's a dry season from May to August in Zambia, so there was a bushfire, and we walk up to this home, and everything's on fire. I should have put a picture up, but, and we help them fight off the fire. So you pull, like, down branches from a tree, and we're fighting off this fire, helping this family, and we, like, steer the fire away from their home, and we go to sit down with them, and we tell them, like, we are Americans, and we're here, and we're visiting your country, and it's beautiful. Like, thank you for welcoming us into your home. We're so thankful. Like, we want to hear about you. What is your life about? And stuff like that. And we're talking with them, telling them, we're here. Like, we're sharing the gospel with you. It's changed my life. I want to share it with you. And we're sharing this, and she starts manifesting a demon. And I was like, what? Like, I don't know what to do. And they're like, just start, like, casting it out, just start saying your authority over it, like, just start speaking that. So we start speaking that over her, saying, you're freed from this demon, you are free because of Jesus, you're by the blood of Jesus, you're free. So we did that, and she starts to calm down, and we're like, okay, now we have to tell you about Jesus, because without Jesus, you cannot fight off what's happening in your life. And she's like, no, I don't want Jesus, like, because an influence in Zambia that they have is witchcraft. So they do a lot of like wearing these bracelets or these necklaces, mm-hmm. and they do cuts on their bodies. And so she's like, no, like, I'm fine, like, da-da-da. And I noticed the cuts on her, and I was like, I have scars, because a part of my testimony also is that I was a cutter. And I was like, look at my scars. Like, let me show you. Like, when I didn't have Jesus, I was really depressed and lost. And now that Jesus has come into my life, like, I don't have to do this because of his blood shed for me. And told her the truth and told her about Jesus and what he's done. And she was like, okay, like, I will give my life to Jesus. So she gave her life to the Lord. And we sit down with the family and we're like, okay, no more witch doctors. You don't have to like go to these people because you're opening your door to all this demonic activity and darkness in your life. And they thought that this was something that their daughter had to live with. And we share with them the truth. And then this was the next day. They had hosted like a huge like community meal for us. And we saw her and she came up and she was smiling. And I was like, yes, like the Lord did this. So that's one of the stories. And then this other woman, Grandma Martha, she was actually a Christian. She had been ministered to, gave her life to the Lord when she, like other missionaries had visited her. And we came to her house and she had this Bible and it was like torn up and pages were missing and all this stuff. And she's like, sit, like tell me what you know. Tell me about like what you're learning, disciple me. And I was like, this is incredible. Like this woman is like in her 80s and she's like, tell me more. And she's starting to write down verses. And she's one of the very few people that can actually read the Bible because they're not literate there. So we shared with her and she actually said to us, like, we're so glad that you're here to teach us the Bible. Teach us the Bible. She kept saying that. And that was awesome. So she, like, we went to her home and she showed us how to like grind down the corn maize and to make shema, which is a staple there. And they showed us their way of living and she made us like this fermented like juice thing and we drank it and it was so terrible. but after we had gone to Sikalele, met these people, like had these relationships with them, and our expedition was like one of the couple expeditions that had gone in there and discipled. So we have sector managers living there. Once we did that, our water project team came in and like drilled a well for them. So we had water for them, mm-hmm. and stuff. So we do partner with these areas, but our hope is to build relationships with them first, mm-hmm. before we bring something like this.
I think it's important to realize like where the gifts come from. Because when we come in as Americans, as foreigners, and we drill a well, the tendency in especially in like Africa and those places to be like, oh, okay, Americans come in and bring us stuff. So we should just always, whenever Americans come, we should always just ask them for whatever we need. Instead of being like, no, we come to bring you the gospel. And then from the resources that God has given us, we will bring you water so that they know that it's God providing. Because I think that's the most important thing. And then they realize that like they can ask God for whatever they need and he'll bring it. Like if they need water, you don't need necessarily a well drilling team to come in. Like God can do it supernaturally. But when we have the resources, we want to show them through the love of Christ as well. So,
yeah. And a lot of Zambians are hard workers. So they want to learn how to do this stuff, mm-hmm. so that one day, like I said, when we leave, we're not leaving them with a well that will break someday. Like, mm-hmm. they'll learn and we'll work with them. And like, you know, so that's really awesome. Our last stage is sustain, which is basically kind of what I've been filtering through, is just to be able to exit the area knowing that we've left it in a better place so that they can thrive on their own. One of the things that we focus on is our leadership network. So in Zambia right now, we have our leaders who are training about, I think it was like 36 different like leaders. So, mm-hmm. people like a mayor or like mayor, I don't know the other word, but like a mayor, someone who has influence in an area. So 36 leaders within Zambia who have influence over 900,000 people, so that Overland is not, we're doing this and we're doing this, but we are focused on like funneling through and down to like the people So we discipled them with like the Bible,
right,
and the Word of God and prayer and I'm trying to think of anything else that's, but yeah, those basic things, which is huge.
Let's keep going. We're running out of time. Just keep going.
Basically,
So Jen and I are blessed because she speaks Vietnamese and I am learning it. It's not easy, but we are thankful for that gift because in Cambodia there's a huge portion of the population that's Vietnamese refugees fleeing from the communist dictatorship in Vietnam, and they're not really accepted by the Cambodian people either. So there's a lot of tension there, and they all basically live on this lake, this big Tonle Sap lake. And so there's like 400,000 Vietnamese refugees and one little boat church, church in the middle of the lake. So we our team, Hunter and Sarah, like met with the pastor there, and they've gotten to talk with them, and they want to like bring people in, but they don't have enough translators. So we're going to use that to go out there and to bring the gospel to them, because there's a huge, like, I mean, in a country that's already like had so much difficulty with the Khmer Rouge and you know, sex trafficking and all this stuff, there's also these people who are isolated and separated from the rest of the culture as well. So there's a lot of need there, and we want to bring that hope into those places, because there's nothing else that changes lives so substantially. So
yeah. Sorry, we only have a couple minutes, so we are going to be here probably like for our next session and then for lunch too, so we definitely want to talk with you more, but we kind of want to talk about like what you guys can do, you know, after you've heard what we're doing and stuff and what your call is within the church. And we want to talk about our role as Christians to send missionaries overseas.
I think that I heard a quote that says there's three options for us as believers when it comes to missions and it comes to ministry. The first is you're called to send. We're all called to be senders, whether that's financially however you can send someone overseas. So Jen and I are currently like raising support, so that's a good place that you can donate. But there's also always other organizations that you can give to. The other option is the second option is you're called to go. You're called to be like ministers. I mean, Jesus says, all authority has been given to me, therefore go. Go out into the nations and do ministry. So we have lots of options all summer. Maybe this summer is a little too late, but all summer generally we lead short-term trips in Cambodia and in Zambia and Brazil to the unreached places. So if you really feel called to go, you can sign up to go on a short-term trip and, you know, get your feet wet in whatever capacity you feel comfortable with. And then the third option, you're either called to send, called to go, or you disobey. Those are your only choices. You either either are called to missions or you disobey the commandment of God. So we want to give you that opportunity.
Yeah. This is where we are in May. So we have Cambodia, Myanmar, Tanzania, and Zambia. We have sector in like Mozambique and Zanzibar. But those areas don't have expeditions yet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is just a brief thing that I was thinking. You sign up, you go to overlandmissions.com, expeditions, or any other missions organization out there. You sign up, you fundraise for your trip, you get on a plane, and you share your story, you share the gospel with people, and you build friendships that last forever, and you come back and you tell your story the way that we are. We're just telling our story. It's that easy. But you share your story with your friends and you're on your campus and stuff. I think the last thing I have is just the three-month training that we talked about, which is offered to anyone. So we have our expeditions and then we have our advanced missions training. So this is the same every year, but we have May to August, which is what Tony and I did. And we can talk more about that one-on-one. And then we have August to November. And I think that's it. I'm sorry that we're, I don't want you guys to be late to the other one, but if you have any questions.
The advanced mission training, is that only if you're working with openings, or is it
for anyone?
Okay. There's a lot of people.
Our requirement to join staff is that you have to do advanced missions training, but you don't have to do staff after you've done advanced missions training.
There was a girl on our team who came back, and we do like 2 weeks of intense like wilderness response training, like medical stuff. And she came back and got her EMT license and became a, you know, ambulance driver. So it's like anywhere you can do anything. So it's just a good training.
Anything? Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, yeah.
You've been listening to Teaching from Disciple Makers. To learn more about Disciple Makers, check out our website at www.dm.org or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/disciplemakers. Disciple Makers, reaching the campus, reaching the world.